Hi, and welcome again to Don't Know Beach About History, Short Histories of Long Beach, brought to you by the Long Beach Public Library. I'm Jeff Whalen, local history librarian here at the Billie Jean King Main Library in Long Beach. And today, we're going to be going back to the 70s, talking about the legendary Pike Mummy, the wax dummy in the amusement park funhouse that turned out to be the all-too-real mummified corpse of an actual person, a fact that was only discovered when a film crew came to the Pike to shoot an episode of The $6 Million Man in 1976, and the mummy's arm fell off when a crew member tried to move it. And not only did the wax dummy turn out to be an actual person, but the person turned out to be a Wild West train robber shot dead by a sheriff's posse in 1911. Whoa, is any of this true? Brother, it all is. Joining me today is Josh Sanchez, Teen Services Librarian here at the Main Library. What's the good word, Josh?
You know, hanging in there, making the most of it.
Me too. So far in this podcast, we've explored some of the, let's say, lesser-known Long Beach stories that maybe some people have heard about, maybe some other people not so much. The Pike Mummy story we'll be talking about today is definitely more famous than the other stories we've tackled to date. Josh, had you heard of this story before?
Only when you told me about it upon being briefed for this episode.
Yeah, during our briefing.
Yeah.
It's interesting that some people know it and some people don't. There's been at least two books written on the subject, and there's lots of info about it on the internet. Though I must say that much of the information on the internet is super internet-y and not entirely reliable. So hopefully we'll be able to get to the bottom of this truly weird story. Okay, but first we have to back up a little and talk about the Pike. It's always this way, Josh. You always have to back up a little bit and talk about the Pike on this show. But what is the Pike, Josh?
So the Pike is, it's sort of like a place, but it's also a state of mind.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, for people who don't know or who want a refresher, the Pike was this big carnival amusement park type situation in downtown Long Beach that started up around 1902 and officially closed in 1979. And for a long time, it was one of Long Beach's main claims to fame. In fact, the Pike was the fifth largest amusement park in the country until Disneyland opened in the 50s. And when Disneyland opened, it ushered in a new modern kind of amusement park experience that we're all used to now. But back in the day, the Pike had a very different vibe than Disneyland. The Pike was more of an old-timey, semi-seedy carnival-type feeling with tattoo parlors and peep shows and fortune tellers and booze and freak shows and a roller coaster that would kill people from time to time and much else geared to appeal not only to fun-seeking locals but also to the Pike's classic clientele of sailors on shore leave and out-of-towners looking for out-of-town thrills. It was not always family-friendly, and at one point in the 40s, the L.A. County District Attorney called the Pike, quote, a menace to our community and to soldiers and sailors on leave.
That sounds like a fun time.
Good times, right?
Yeah.
The Pike's grittiness, let's call it, ebbed and flowed over the years, and some people liked it and some people didn't like it. Somebody told me that some Long Beach parents would forbid their children from going to the Pike, but that certain teenagers would secretly ditch school and take the bus and go there anyway to delight in the dark allure of the place. And if my grandfather is listening, it wasn't my dad who told me that because he definitely told me to say that he didn't do anything like that when he was a teenager, supposedly. So that was part of the Pike's charm and also part of its decline as well, as people increasingly wanted that family-friendly Disneyland or Knott's Berry Farm experience. And when the Pike removed the Cyclone Racer roller coaster in 1968, fewer people died on it, true, but sometimes you'll read that once the Cyclone Racer was gone, it sealed the Pike's fate. And amid a lot of city politics and other factors, the Pike continued its slow-motion decline through the 70s until its inevitable demise, officially in 1979, though many feel it really ended years before. Okay, so that's a little perspective on the Pike going into the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the years, a number of movies had been filmed, at least in part at the Pike, usually in the Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello kind of direction, during the Pike's heydays in the 20s and 30s. And while movie shoots declined into the Pike's waning days of the 70s, the filming of TV shows at the Pike actually increased. Tremendously.
Hmm.
Charlie's Angels, Emergency, The Hardy Boys, Starsky and Hutch, SWAT, The $6 Million Man, Cannon, The Rockford Files, Mannix, Barnaby Jones, and my personal favorite, Columbo, all shot episodes featuring the Pike in the 1970s. Josh, have you heard of any of those shows?
I would say half. And I've seen most of the ones that you've mentioned. My mom was a huge Columbo fan.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I am by proxy, I guess. He's a cool guy. Good show.
What about The $6 Million Man? The show that was filming at the Pike when they found the mummified corpse. You know that one?
I have heard of it. And it's definitely that sound effect and the intro that is most kind of present in my mind.
It's about Colonel Steve Austin, who works for NASA, and he sometimes has a mustache. And he's an astronaut, which is great. But then he crashes while test piloting some kind of experimental airplane, and he's badly hurt. Now, normally, Josh, NASA would just leave the body of a severely injured test pilot out there on the tarmac. But in this case, they decide they have the technology. They can rebuild him. So they do. Better, stronger, faster. And whenever Steve Austin uses his bionic powers, it makes this sound. And whenever he runs really fast, they indicate he's running really fast by showing him running in slow motion and making that sound. And he solves crimes, usually of the international spy variety, that reflected the Cold War anxiety of the time.
Sure.
Anyway, so the $6 Million Man program goes to film an episode at the Pike. And the plot of that episode is that these evil East German scientists have infiltrated an amusement park so they can shoot down an American B-1 bomber by firing a missile at it at Tilt-A-Whirl ride. And they use the merry-go-round as a satellite dish, and they make all the rides go backwards at one point by using ion disseminator calibration. And the East Germans are running their entire operation out of the amusement park's funhouse called the Laugh-in-the-Dark Funhouse.
It's textbook.
Now, the real Laugh-in-the-Dark Funhouse had been in operation at the Pike since the 50s. And it was one of those old-timey funhouses you might see in a movie with, like, creepy early animatronic clowns and creatures and things that would jump out at you and other freaky and spooky stuff. It was that kind of place. So, in December 1976, the $6 Million Man crew shows up to the Pike, and they begin prepping for the shoot. And they're moving stuff around, or whatever it is they do, setting up lights and the craft service table and whatever. And while getting the interior of the Laugh-in-the-Dark Funhouse ready for filming, one of the crew guys goes to move a wax dummy that was hanging by a noose. And while the crew guy is attempting to take the thing down, the arm of the dummy falls off. So the guy picks it up, and he figures he'll have to glue it back on. But before he does, he notices that it's a really weird dummy arm, in that it had what appeared to be a human bone inside it. And instead of wax or plastic or whatever on the outside, it seemed to be made of a dried beef jerky type matter. So they look at it and think about it and talk about it. And they get an off-duty police officer working security for the shoot to come over and have a look. And so he does. And then he decides to have an inspector from the Long Beach Fire Department, who's also on scene at the shoot, come have a look at it. And I guess they come to the conclusion that it's the body of a real person. It's a little unclear what happens next. Sometimes reports say that the fire inspector took the arm back to the fire station to have the paramedics look at it and determine if it's real or not. Sometimes you read that the fire department thought it would be funny to call the paramedics and say, "Come quick, there's someone at the Pike suffering from extreme dehydration." Then when the paramedics come, sirens are blaring and lights are flashing, they all crack up and say, "Nah, it's just this dead guy." There's not a lot to back that story up, by the way, even though it's repeated a bunch. And I feel, Josh, that it's apocryphal.
Yeah.
In any case, nobody calls the police until the next day. But they do eventually call the police, and the police come, and they get the body, and they take it to the L.A. coroner's office, headed by none other than Dr. Thomas Noguchi, the famous coroner to the stars. And Noguchi and his people get to work trying to identify the body and everything else that's going on with this mummy. Okay, now meanwhile, the story gets out. The Long Beach Press-Telegram's headline was, "Body in the Funhouse Leaves Nobody Amused." And the story's picked up by the LA Times and other papers. And nobody has any idea who this mummy could be. And here's pretty much all they know for the first couple days. It's a body, it's 5'3", it's super wrinkly, and it's a guy. They know this last part because the mummy had been hanging there in the funhouse for some 5 years, naked, covered in fluorescent red paint. Did I mention he had been painted in fluorescent red paint?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he was. But naked and, you know, anatomically correct, as the saying goes. And Josh, I'm not at all ashamed to say that that sounds legitimately scary to me. Oh, and he doesn't have his fingers anymore because they broke off at some point.
That happens.
So who is this guy? Well, one of the original theories was that the body was that of a Long Beach man who died in 1901 and had been shot off his horse as he was riding along on his horse and was killed. Although the identity of his killer was never known, and also the identity of the man himself was never known, and also the body disappeared. So they thought that was a pretty solid theory at first. But that turned out to be a bit of a fluorescent red herring. And that joke is definitely on the bubble, Josh.
I think it's good.
Yeah? Leave it in?
Yeah. I don't know.
But in a couple days, a theory started emerging. A correct theory, as it would turn out, though it was still very much unofficial at that point, that the corpse was that of a gun-totin', rootin'-tootin', turn-of-the-century Oklahoma outlaw named Elmer McCurdy. Now, depending on what report you read, Elmer was either a bloodthirsty and notorious criminal, or he was an inept and ridiculous and not famous at all criminal. His bank and train robbing career was not particularly successful or long-lived. He seemed to have a knack for either robbing the wrong train or trying to blow open a safe with nitroglycerin and accidentally blowing up the money as well. This kind of thing. When he was killed by a posse on October 7th, 1911, in the Osage Hills of Oklahoma, it was after he'd robbed the wrong train, and instead of getting hundreds of thousands of dollars as planned, he got $40 and a couple bottles of whiskey, and then he ran away, and then the posse shot him, and he died.
Good criminal. He's good at his job, obviously.
You know? So they took his body to an undertaker who embalmed him, but nobody showed up to claim the body. So the undertaker propped him up in the back room of his shop, Weekend at Bernie's style. And would charge a nickel for people to come have a look at Elmer, billed as the bandit who wouldn't give up. A few years went by, and some people claiming to be Elmer's brothers came and took Elmer from the undertaker, saying they wanted to take him home and give him a decent burial. But they weren't Elmer's brothers, Josh.
Who were they?
They were carnival folk. And they didn't want to bury him, Josh. They wanted to take him on tour with their carnival. And thus began Elmer's career as a traveling corpse.
That's my dream job.
But how did this theory even begin that the mummy found at the Laugh in the Dark Funhouse was the outlaw Elmer McCurdy? Who was even raising this possibility when, by all accounts, nobody at the Pike even knew that the mummy was there? Well, a lot of it came from a guy named David F. Friedman, a prolific B-movie producer and self-described mighty monarch of exploitation. He'd produced a bunch of exploitation movies such as 1963's Blood Feast, sometimes considered the first splatter film, and a bunch of low-budget gems in the 50s, 60s, and 70s with titles like 2000 Maniacs and The Erotic Adventures of Robin Hood. But this is how Friedman said he knew it was Elmer. Friedman's company, you're going to follow me on this, Josh.
Got it.
Okay, you ready?
Okay.
This is, you gotta go with me on this.
All right, quiz is after, at the end.
No, just getting through the sentence is the test.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Friedman said that an old partner of his, way back in 1921, had received the embalmed body of a Wild West outlaw, Elmer McCurdy, as collateral for a $500 loan he gave some guy from a traveling carnival. But the loan had never been paid back, so Friedman's old partner got to keep Elmer, and he started touring him around, displaying him in a traveling show called the Museum of Crime, all over the country for years. They'd rent him out to carnivals and sideshows, whoever needed an outlaw mummy. When Friedman partnered up with this guy, he supposedly put Elmer in a couple movies too, though I'm not sure that's true. She Freak, a loose 1967 remake of the 1930s horror classic Freaks, is the movie most often cited as featuring Elmer. But I have watched She-Freak, and Elmer is not in the movie, which is only one of several problems I had with the picture.
What were some of your other problems?
It's boring.
Okay.
Okay, so in 1968, Friedman's company sold Elmer, along with some dummies that were actually dummies, to the Hollywood Wax Museum, who in turn then sold Elmer, along with some regular wax dummies, to a different wax museum that was then operating at the Pike in Long Beach in the early 70s. Yeah? You got it?
Yeah, I get it.
Elmer, at the time he was sold to the Pike, by the way, was no longer being presented as a Wild West outlaw, but instead had been repackaged as the 5,000-year-old man and was presented as a mummy wrapped in brown gauze. But the Pike Wax Museum, which was privately owned, not owned by the Pike itself, went out of business, kind of in a middle-of-the-night kind of way, and they just left a bunch of their stuff there. And so the Pike people cleaned it up and repurposed what they could, and they ended up using Elmer in the Laugh in the Dark Funhouse.
That's good recycling.
Yeah, they stripped him naked, painted him fluorescent red, and hung him from a noose, like you do.
Sure.
And it's very unclear if anyone at that point knew that Elmer was a real person and not a wax dummy. As far as I can tell, nobody working at the funhouse was aware of it. Okay, so that's the basic story that was making the rounds, and this idea that the mummy was an Old West outlaw gained a lot of traction in the press. but they didn't know. They didn't know for sure. It was a good story, but it's not easy to get to the truth, perhaps, when a lot of your sources are carnival folk and exploitation film folk. People who are comfortable with, let's say, tweaking the truth a little for fun. And even if everything that Friedman said checked out, his information only went back to 1921, and Elmer McCurdy died in 1911. How could authorities be sure that this body belonged to Elmer? And they did need to know. People in Oklahoma were starting to call for the return of the body. In fact, the City Council of Guthrie, Oklahoma, home of the Oklahoma Territorial Museum, had started asking for the body to be returned to Oklahoma so they could bury him in their Boot Hill Cemetery, which featured the graves of a number of noted Oklahoma gunfighters. Bill Lehman, spokesman for the Guthrie City Council, told newspapers, quote, "We just feel he should be laid to rest in a Christian manner after 66 years of being bandied about from pillar to post, hung on a gallows, placed on public display, and being a curiosity in a Wild West show." And other people wanted a crack at getting the mummy as well, including the Pike, who apparently asked if it was at all possible to get Elmer back. The Laugh in the Dark ride had tripled its business in the weeks after the discovery of Elmer, and they'd put up a sign that said, "The Mummy's Hangout." So authorities needed a positive ID. Now, meanwhile, at the L.A. coroner's office, Thomas Noguchi and the gang were trying to determine the body's identity using a little something we call science. Josh, who was Thomas Noguchi?
He was the famous coroner to the stars, who is famous for Natalie Wood.
Yeah, Natalie Wood, and a host of other controversial celebrity deaths. You nailed that one. The Elmer McCurdy story was good, but they had to see if the facts in the case supported the theory. And so Noguchi and his crew set to work on the mummy case. First, they established a rough time frame for the death. Dude had been embalmed using arsenic, a process that had been big during the Civil War, but had been banned around the turn of the century. So that was a clue. Analysis of the mummy's pelvic bones put his estimated age of death somewhere in his mid-30s. Elmer died at 31, so pretty close there. And they were able to determine that he had indeed died of a gunshot wound, and they found a bullet fragment lodged in his hip bone that the LAPD ballistics people said could have only come from a bullet made between 1905 and 1940. And so far, everything they were finding was lining up with press reports of McCurdy's death back in 1911, as well as in his original autopsy. They wanted to look at his fingerprints, but his fingers were gone. They wanted to look at his dental work to see if there was any distinguishing characteristics in there, and they had to pry open his mouth and remove his mandible. And what did they find in his mouth, Josh?
Nothing. Emptiness.
That's right. They found a 1924 penny. Also in his mouth, they found some ticket stubs. One was for the Pike, and another was for, you got it, the Museum of Crime. That was Elmer's old show. This had to be Elmer, right?
Had to be.
And it was, Josh.
I knew it.
But Noguchi still wasn't going to just put the mummy in a big puffy envelope and mail it to Guthrie, Oklahoma. So Noguchi instead mailed them a letter. And I don't know if he used a puffy envelope, but the letter said that the only way he'd release the body to Guthrie was if they sent their own forensic team to confirm the identification and if they agreed to pay for a secure and dignified burial for Elmer. So Oklahoma flew out a team, including an elite osteologist. And by using a painstaking but surprisingly accurate technique called medial superimposition, they were able to line up photos of the mummy's skull with the few death photos of Elmer that existed. And using that technique, they were able to confirm, to Dr. Noguchi's satisfaction, the identity of the mummy. It was Elmer McCurdy. So they sewed his arm back on, and in April 1977, Elmer was released to the Oklahoma Historical Society and flown in the baggage compartment on TWA back to Oklahoma. His plane was met by a throng of reporters. Elmer was buried in Guthrie, Oklahoma, under several feet of concrete to dissuade any further monkey business with Elmer's body. But there was further monkey business, Josh.
There always is.
A murder mystery theater started hosting events at Elmer's grave. They won't leave this guy alone.
Yeah.
His headstone reads, "Elmer McCurdy, shot by Sheriff's Posse in Osage Hills on October 7th, 1911. Returned to Guthrie, Oklahoma from Los Angeles County, California for burial April 22nd, 1977. And that's the story of the Pike mummy, Josh.
Wow. Yeah.
Didn't see that coming, huh?
No, I didn't.
Josh, what's our takeaway from this?
That just wait till after you're dead to do your traveling. It's cheaper.
Thanks for being here today, Josh.
You're welcome. It was fun.
It was my pleasure, Josh. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Goodbye.